Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hi, and welcome to the Cross Border Catch-Up, the podcast for global employers who want to stay in the know about cutting-edge employment issues worldwide. My name is Patty Shapiro, and I'm here with my colleague, Eric Lee. We're cross-border attorneys here at Ogletree, and today we're going to talk about the recent digital nomad visa trend in East Asia.
Thank you, Patty. For today's podcast topic, I want to go over a recent trend in what is known as a digital nomad visas in East Asia, which allows individuals to work remotely in a country for foreign employers. For those who may be less familiar with these types of visas, digital nomad visas are different from typical work visas that individuals apply to work in a foreign country, in that the digital nomad visas are specifically designed for people to work and live in a country while working remotely for a foreign employer. Particularly during COVID and for a period thereafter, the remote work technology has become much more of a norm for employers and employees. Overseas remote work has been such a hot topic for many U.S. employers as they've experienced a big surge of employee requests to work remotely for another country, whether it's due to personal reasons or their wish to travel and work from a different work environment. And as such, many countries, particularly those countries that have more often been the more popular destinations for tourists and digital nomads, they have begun introducing digital nomad visas to allow people to work remotely in their countries by absolving the individuals from the typical hurdles and headaches involved with work authorization and tax issues. Now, of course, we're also observing that many countries are now retracting these programs for various reasons, which we'll not cover in this podcast. But perhaps, that could be a topic for another day.
That's a great point. There's a lot of information coming out about this digital nomad concept actually driving up prices for locals in different countries. And it's turning out to maybe not be as favorable or incentivizing as we initially thought that this digital nomad program would be. So what's going on in East Asia?
East Asian countries have until now not participated in the global trend of introducing digital nomad visas for foreigners. That is about to change this year, as Japan has announced that it aims to introduce its first digital nomad visa program this year, and South Korea actually starting its trial program of digital nomad visas to foreigners on January 1st of this year. According to announcements, digital nomad visa is officially called the workcation visa in Korea.
Do we know what they might mean by a trial program?
It's on an indefinite trial period. So I guess they want to just test the waters and see how many individuals actually want to, participate in the digital nomad program that it is launching. And second of all, like what its, economic impact actually will be. According to, government announcements, I believe the hope of this program is to have high-income foreign individuals come to Korea and kind of enliven its regional economies. But, as you've mentioned, we've been observing a lot of countries where they've introduced the digital nomad visa programs and did not actually get the effect that they were hoping for and actually experienced unexpected, negative economic consequences, such as, the prices going up, gentrification, and all of that.
That's a great point, because South Korea seems to be the first country that I've seen that is actually kind of taking a conservative approach to this digital nomad visa idea and recognizing that it might have negative consequences. So the testing the waters approach is really interesting.
This may be less of a concern for major cities like Seoul, or if Japan does in fact launch its program in later this year in Tokyo, where prices are already pretty high. So there's less worry about, rising, cost of living. But for smaller cities or even, smaller neighborhoods where they may not be exposed to a lot of, influx of foreign currency, this could become an issue. So, I mean, I think they are aware of that, and that may partly be the reason why they are only saying that this is a test program.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting approach. So tell us more about this program. What is South Korea planning?
According to the announcements, Digital Nomad Visa is officially called the Workcation Visa in Korea, which will allow eligible foreign nationals and their family members to reside in South Korea while teleworking for their home employer for up to 2 years. The government authorities has hinted that one of the main purposes of launching the Workcation Visa is to allow high-income foreign individuals to work and live in Korea for an extended period and hopefully enliven its regional economies in South Korea. As such, the Workcation Visa has certain eligibility requirements. First, and most obviously, the individual must demonstrate that they have sufficient minimum income. The applicable threshold in the year 2024 is a minimum annual income of 84,960,000 Korean won, which equates to approximately 63,650 US dollars. The second eligibility requirement is that the individual must have a clean criminal record, and they have to evidence this by presenting a criminal history certificate. The third requirement is that the individual must show a proof of private health insurance with coverage of at least 100 million Korean won, which is approximately 75,000 US dollars. And also, if they are planning to accompany a family member, you have to show evidence of family relationship, such as a marriage or birth certificate. And finally, and this may be a strange one, but the individual must have work experience in their field for at least a year.
Wow, those are a lot of requirements and a lot of official documentation, it seems. From what I've seen in the past, countries that want proof of a clean criminal record, for example, typically want an FBI certificate, which we've seen take a long time. Is that what South Korea is looking for as well?
Not exactly sure. The fact that you need to present proof of a clean criminal record, it's I'm not exactly sure how long of a process that is, but these are not like easy requirements for an individual to just casually apply for a digital nomad visa, because you have to show that you meet the minimum income threshold. You need to have a clean criminal record. You also need to have proof of a private health insurance with a coverage of at least 75,000 US dollars. So these are not easy requirements, although they are not impossible to satisfy.
So it sounds like the application process is probably going to include submitting maybe an offer letter, since we don't do employment contracts here in the US typically, that demonstrates you meet the annual income requirement. And then your private health insurance is probably pretty straightforward. But the clean criminal record and the marriage or birth certificate piece is actually really interesting. I've not seen a country with a digital nomad visa require a marriage or birth certificate as part of their application procedure for accompanying family members. I wonder, do we have any guidance yet from South Korea if they're going to expect these documents, at least the official government documents, to be notarized and apostilled?
That's a good question. There's not much guidance on what the legalization requirements for the documents to be submitted for the visa are. As of now, all we know is that any individual that meets these requirements can submit their documentation to the South Korean consular post in their country of residence, which will then be processed and issued if all of the requirements are met. And then the holder can carry it into South Korea and apply for a residence card. Of course, because you know there is a lack of guidance as of now on what the legalization requirements are, we cannot provide like a rough estimate of how long the visa application process will be. But once more regulations or informations are disseminated about the visa application process, I'm pretty sure that this will become clearer in the future.
Sure, and probably as we see some examples too of employees applying for this. You mentioned that after the individual goes to South Korea with their digital nomad visa, they have to apply for a residence card. at a very high level, what does that process look like?
A residence card is known as an alien registration card. It's a Korean identification card for foreigners who stay and reside in Korea for more than 90 days. We are not sure as of now, as there is a lack of guidance on this, whether you would need the residence card to actually start working for a foreign employer in Korea. But, you know, we're hoping that additional guidance on this will become available as people start applying for digital nomad visas.
Are there any restrictions for individuals that have an approved digital nomad visa? Is there anything that they can't do while they're in South Korea?
Yes. The digital nomad visa is designed only for the narrow purpose of the holder teleworking for a foreign employer. So holders are strictly prohibited from being employed by a company in South Korea or from earning money in South Korea by engaging in for-profit activities. So employers should be mindful of utilizing the digital nomad visa when sending employees to Korea to work in conjunction with its local office or to engage in duties that could engage the Korean market to generate profit.
That's an interesting point. So the digital nomad visa perhaps is not a solution for employers that have a business interest in having somebody abroad.
Right. So the digital nomad visa would not really work for sending employees to Korea when their work duties would involve Korea-related elements or, you know, engaging the Korean market to generate profit. Also, another thing to note is that South Korea's statute on the conflict of laws, the Private International Law Act, provides that local law applies to employment relationship where work is habitually performed in the Republic of Korea. This is also known as the territoriality principle. So, you know, what this means is that even if you have a valid digital nomad visa, and if the employee has resided in Korea for an extended period, for example, 6 months or a year, that employee may qualify for protection under Article 23 of the Labor Standard Act, which requires just cause to terminate or claim entitlements to other employment protections under South Korean employment law. Understandably, this creates significant complications for employers, as the South Korean employment law is known to be heavily protective of its employees, particularly when it comes to their termination rights. So that's also something that employers should be mindful of. And of course, as mentioned earlier, you know, there's not much detailed information available regarding how the new digital nomad visa is going to interact with the existing employment law landscape in South Korea. But as the visa comes into broader use, these issues will be likely addressed by further regulations and court precedents. So we should, you know, keep an eye on those. And we will, of course, cover any significant updates and developments in this regard. So please stay tuned for our future podcasts.
It's interesting that you noted that this territoriality principle might apply to apply South Korean employment law to foreign employees that are working for foreign employers, because we've discussed that a digital nomad visa is not necessarily appropriate for foreign companies, so U.S. companies sending their U.S. employees there for a business purpose. So they're not really intending to have to comply with South Korean employment law. But if they're allowing somebody to go there for their own personal reasons on this digital nomad visa, the foreign employer runs the risk of having to comply with these laws that are very different from what they're used to, at least here in the U.S.
Right. I mean, I guess the intent of the digital nomad visa would be not to create any sort of an employment liabilities for foreign employers that approve such arrangements in South Korea. But the fact is, right now, you know, the digital nomad visa program doesn't really specify how it's going to interact with a specific language in the Private International Law Act, which says that any work that is habitually performed in the Republic of Korea is applicable for protection under South Korea's employment law.
It's interesting. It sounds like we're in need of a lot more guidance from South Korea as to how all of this is going to apply and work in practice. But it's an interesting development. So thank you, Eric, for this information. and keeping us up to date on the latest in South Korea when it comes to digital nomad visas. And thank you all for joining us for today's cross-border catch-up. Follow us to stay in the know about other cutting-edge employment issues worldwide.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.